listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Oh, how we danced. Footwork in the martial arts. Perhaps the least appreciated, least well understood, and least frequently well developed aspect of the martial arts is simple movement, or as it's called in the standing part of the game, footwork. I discussed martial arts stances in an earlier podcast entitled Taking a Stance on Martial Arts Stances. The structure and posture of your stance is very important, but stances are only the beginning. You now must take that structure and move it. That, too, is just the beginning. You must also move in a way that preserves your structure and balance. But even that is not enough. You must also do all of this at combat speed while an opponent is doing his or her best to hit you. Wow, that's a lot of work. Why don't I just ignore footwork and learn to punch and kick really well? Good luck with that. I'm fond of telling my students that given a choice between having great footwork but average striking skills on the one hand, and having average footwork but great striking skills on the other, I will take the great footwork skills every time. My fencing teacher, John Yarger, tells his students that you fence with your feet more than you do with your hands. Let's look at some of the many things that footwork does for you. One of the first footwork concepts you learn is to control the distance between you and your opponent. There are at least two reasons for this. The first is that your opponent may be either significantly taller or shorter than you. There is, obviously, a distance where the taller fighter can score and the shorter fighter can't. A smart, taller fighter will try to live in that range. If he succeeds, life will suck for the shorter fighter. This fact alone makes it very important for each fighter to develop skill at controlling the distance with footwork. Your particular style of fighting will also have an effect. You may be the taller fighter, but may not have yet developed an effective kicking game. Legs are longer than arms, if you didn't already know. Thus, you may still have the advantage of height, but against a competent kicker, you no longer have the advantage of reach. Your footwork will need to adapt accordingly. Related to distance control is a concept that I learned from the late karate and kickboxing legend Joe Louis, disrupting the opponent's set point. The set point is the moment when your opponent is simultaneously close enough to strike at you, properly aimed to strike at you, and well enough based in his stance to strike at you. If at least one of these three criteria are not present, you are essentially safe from being struck effectively. For example, if the opponent is set in his stance, but is either too far away or not aimed correctly, you are momentarily immune to his attacks. Well, you can bring about either of those two conditions with footwork. Let's say you see the opponent step into a solid stance in range to hit you. You could disrupt his set point by simply stepping back out of range. You could also disrupt it by sidestepping or circling off the center line of the opponent. A third way to try to disrupt it would be to immediately attack in an attempt to get him to think of defense rather than offense, and thus possibly induce him to unset himself. Managing the distance and disrupting the opponent's set point are only the beginning of using footwork to protect yourself. You also need to be paying attention to your environment. A self-defense fight could take place in any number of environments. You could be in the middle of a parking lot, a field, or a large indoor area like a gymnasium. On the other extreme, you could be in close quarters like a hallway, an alcove, or an elevator. In a couple of earlier podcasts entitled, I Don't Think You Appreciate the Gravity of the Situation, Parts 1 and 2, I even discussed what it might be like to fight in zero gravity or on Mars. Check out those episodes if you want to try to stretch your brain. Back here on Earth, environmental objects like parked cars, trees, support beams, tables, chairs, low ceilings, overhanging balconies, and even bystanders can act as obstacles and constraints, limiting how you can move around, but also presenting opportunities for momentary cover from attacks. Training your footwork with such environmental features in mind can be quite beneficial. Another very important environmental consideration that affects your footwork is footing. Because of this, there's a great deal of difference between modern combat footwork and older footwork, especially modern sport combat footwork. This is true for both Asian and Western martial arts. Here in 2017, we live in a world filled with uniform, smooth footing. Whether it's level floors, sidewalks, parking lots, or streets, there are far fewer obstacles to trip over than at any time in history. This has only been true for a little over a century. It's one thing to dance and glide on the canvas in a ring or a smooth fencing strip. It's another thing entirely to do so in the forest or in a field full of grassy hummocks and gopher holes. To give you just one example, the footwork of modern fencing has evolved quite a bit from the days when dueling was commonplace. It was not uncommon for duels to take place on cobblestone streets, with the odd loose stone to trip over, or holes where stones were missing, to potentially break an ankle, which is quite the drag when an angry opponent is trying to skewer you. Such primitive footing conditions led to footwork that would look out of place and old-fashioned in the ring or the cage, or on the modern fencing strip. It's quite common for modern martial artists to make fun of these archaic forms of footwork, when in reality they are still quite functional under the correct conditions. Even in the pure environment of the ring or the cage, there are still important terrain features. You need to be constantly aware of where both you and your opponent are in relation to the fence, or the ropes, and especially to any corners, or in competitive fencing, to be aware of the location of the end of the strip. It can be death to be trapped in the corner in a boxing or kickboxing fight, or on the end of the strip in a fencing bout. You will use footwork to manage your position in these cases, while at the same time using footwork to relate and deal with your opponent. Even more footwork can come into play when your opponent actually launches an attack at you. In that case, your options include sidestepping, fading back, and crashing forwards to jam the attack. Of course, footwork is also important on the attack, as well as in defense. In fencing, the lunge, the flesh, and the balestra all transport your structure rapidly toward the opponent to help you score. The arts that use kicking attacks might employ stepping, skipping, hopping, spinning, or jumping to help deliver the formidable kinetic energy of a kick to the target. And of course, stepping, shifting, and even sometimes in the case of the Superman punch, jumping, can be used to land punches. Some opponents are quite wary about allowing you to get close enough to strike. This presents another problem that can be addressed with footwork. Such people can be taken in by fooling them into thinking you're momentarily vulnerable. This is sometimes called baiting. One way to do this is to use footwork that is carefully designed to simultaneously make you look vulnerable and set you up to defend and counter the attack that such a position might draw. Other opponents, often called counterfighters, hang back and wait for you to attack so they can counterattack. You can use a form of baiting footwork on the counterfighter as well. One method would be to use a small but sharply executed forward step to draw out the opponent's counterattack so that you can counter the counter with what fencers call counter time. One moment of particular vulnerability in the attack is right after you finish an attack or combination of attacks, especially if you're one of the many fighters who tend to stay rooted in place at that moment. I call this behavior stopping to admire your work. It's a really bad habit. This behavior is especially prevalent among tournament karate, or point, fighters. There are two reasons for this. One is that in point fighting, the action stops immediately when one of the five scoring officials sees what they perceive to be a point being scored. This lulls many point fighters into relaxing their defenses when they feel they have scored an obvious point. The second reason is that many point fighters will freeze and actually pose in a static position at the finish of a scoring technique, in an attempt to sell the point to the scoring officials. Whatever the reason that the fighter stands still after an attack, it's extremely dangerous to do it. Of course, the answer to this problem is footwork as well. In fencing, the most common method is to step backwards to return to your stance after lunging. This is called the recovery, and puts you back into balance and base to better defend yourself. The fact that fencing is done on a 6-foot-wide strip tends to force recovering straight back, or, failing that, to run along the strip past your opponent and out of reach. Many practitioners of arts besides fencing, however, tend to limit themselves in the same way, only backing straight away after attacking, if they recover at all, despite all of the room they have to exploit in their environment. This makes it easier for your opponent to find you with his counter, since your consistent behavior tells him where you will be. A better idea is to do what some coaches call stepping out the side door. This means that as you finish your attack, you move to the right or to the left. There are lots of variations of this: diagonally forward, diagonally away, 90 degrees to either side, or anywhere in between. This not only removes you from your opponent's gun sights, it just might give you an advantageous angle from which to launch a new attack before the opponent can finish adjusting to your new position. Footwork done at a high level can be beautiful to watch, and is frequently compared to dancing, sometimes in a complimentary sense, but sometimes in a less than complimentary one. There have been many examples of fighters using footwork at such a high level that it transcended technique and became art. Gentleman Jim Corbett, the second world heavyweight boxing champion, Willie Pep, Sugar Ray's Robinson and Leonard, and perhaps the best example, Muhammad Ali. As Norman Mailer says in his excellent book, The Fight, fans of Ali, when told how well the great heavyweight had done in a given fight, would often further ask, "Yeah, but did Muhammad dance?" Muhammad Ali made footwork fun, which is a stroke of genius that should be cultivated by more instructors. The less than complimentary comparison to dancing can crop up when some knucklehead ignorantly asserts that a given fighter should, quote, "stand still and fight like a man," unquote. This is a tired old trope that seems to crop up again and again in the history of the martial arts, impugning a fighter's manhood because he actually trains harder to hit his opponent without being hit himself. It always surprises me how many people are more concerned with adherence to a primitive archetype of appearing to be dangerous and manly than they are with cultivating effectiveness and efficiency. The fact that this ultimately self-defeating attitude continues to emerge is a perfect example of the quirkiness of the human brain when it turns its attention to the martial arts. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.